guys, today I'm going to read chapter 4 of the Shakespeare's Plays of Sirico. Like all princes, Sam and I were armed only with sharp daggers that were designed for dining and not for defense. But we drew them and hastened to the mouth of the alleyway. Within its gloomy confines, I could make out three figures bunched together. One was, as I expected, Sapovi. A bald, burly white with a wooden leg had Saul's arms pinned behind him to one huge hand with one huge hand. The other was clapped over the boy's mouth. The scroungy, scarny companion was clutching Saul's long blonde locks and sawing at them with a knife twice the size of ours. "Let him loose, you dog bolts," I shouted, "or we'll carve you into columns." My voice chose that moment to break like a biscuit. The under fellow laughed. "With those toothpicks? Lord, I'm so afraid and trembling." "Stay back now, the both of you," warned the one-legged friend. "We've no wish to harm anyone." "Nay, nor do we," I said. I picked up a good-sized cobblestone and was set to launch it at him when Sam cried, "Let it be! All they want is his hair." "Smart lad," the skinny brigand severed the last of Saul Pelvey's golden hair and held it aloft like Jason holding the golden fleece. "Some grand lady will pay a pretty price for this and make up what the nature failed to give her." The one-legged fellow released Saul Pelvey and gave him a shove. The boy stumbled towards us, holding his strong hand between his hands and sobbing. As the two thieves wandered off down the alley, the burly man said, "Perhaps we should have taken his leg as well. We could have used it." "We'll have more use for a wig," replied the other man, and crackling with laughter, dropped Sal Pelvey's curls across his companion's bald head. I tossed the stone aside. Stupid sots. We shouldn't let them get away with this. "There's no point of getting ourselves killed over it," Sam said. "There's little point in calling the constable here. Those two will get rid of the hair at the nearest wig shop, and even if we found it, we can't very well put it back, can we?" We retrieved Saul Pelvey's cap and carefully covered the ragged remnants of the boy's hair with it. "I don't see any wounds. Did they hurt you?" Saul Pelvey had ceased sobbing and was fiercely wiping away his tears with the hem of his cloak. He might have done more to try to chase them off. "What would you have us do? If we come any closer, they'd have cut your throat, not just your hair. Besides, we didn't dare let them look at your luscious locks." Sam pretended to stroke his nauseous tresses. "They surely would have cast you aside and snatched us instead." This attempt to coax a Pelvey out to fool his mood failed miserably. "I might have expected you to make a jest of it. You always make fun of my hair, both of you. I suspect think it serves me right then, getting it chopped off." "Well, you know," Sam replied, if you had cut sooner, you could have sold it for a good price yourself. As it is, we've neither hurt you nor the curls." I took Sam's arm and drew him aside. "Can't you see how upset Az is? Don't make it worse." "Well, he behaves as though it's our fault, not for saving his wretched hair." "Perhaps it was. Perhaps he should have done more. In any case, it was not his fault. Let's get him home now." "Home? It's not even Gnomes yet. We have the afternoon ahead of us." "Well, do as you like. I'm taking him home." When did you become so concerned about his welfare? When I became a part of our acting company, I said. He scoffed. You're beginning to sound the way Sandra used to, like an older brother. I consider that as a compliment. Now, are you coming with us or not? Sam sighed heavily. All right. It's no fun going about by myself. Sal Palvey walked well ahead of us, his cloak pulled tightly about him, his shoulders hunched to shelter his newly bare neck from the cold. I said softly to Sam, did you notice that things happened back there just as the cunning woman said they would? Of course I noticed. Can she truly see into the future, then, Cubus? He sniffed spectatically. More likely she was in league with those two louts, and she let them know somehow that there was a good head of hair to be had. I suppose you're right. I wouldn't help wondering all the same. I was not so naive as to suppose that everything La Vision said counted on to come true. Even was it not possible, occasionally she got a genuine glimpse of things to come. Sam tried his best to talk me into talking a shortcut home across the Thames. Ordinarily, that would have been sensible enough suggestion. We need only have paid a wherryman to row us across. But the winter had been so unusually cold that the river was frozen over the London Bridge and to Whitehall so solidly that the folk had begun to venture out upon it to skate or fish through the ice. Some of the parts were less solid than others, though the unfortunate souls who found them often ended up in the land of Rumbelow, that is to say, a watery grave. Though Sam seemed to think that it would be a great lark to cross on the ice, I insisted on using the bridge. Huh, you never heard the saying, wise men go over the London Bridge, fools go under? I had no intention to going under the bridge, said Sam, grumbled, only across the ice. He came on the spot to Cheapside, where the public pillory stood. Despite the cold, the authorities had sentenced some poor wight to stand there with arms and necks imprisoned. He appeared more prosperous and respectable than usual occupant of pillory. He twisted his stiff neck to give us a beseeching look. I don't suppose I could prevail upon you to do me a small favor, such as setting you free, Sam suggested. The man tried to grin, but it was more in the way of grimace. I wouldn't refuse, but what I really like is for someone to wipe my nose. There's a kerchief in the pocket of my cloak. Sam retrieved the kerchief and swiped the man's cold, reddened nose several times. You don't look like a bargain to me. What did you do to earn this? Nothing wicked, I assure you. I move on now, if were you. You don't want to be seen talking to me. They may think I'm attempting to convert you. What do you mean? I asked. So Palvey spoke up unexpectedly, his voice still carried a loud load of spite. He means he's a papist. A Catholic? I didn't ken he was punished white just for that. Sam leaned in close to him and whispered, You're not a priest, are you? Hardly. Only a printer who was unwise enough to publish a few rather harmless pamphlets defending the old faith. Sam gave the man's nose a last wipe and returned the handkerchief to him. As we turned down the French Church Street, Sam said, "It doesn't seem right, does it? Him being put in the stocks for printing a few pamphlets?" "Not just any pamphlets," Sal probably pointed out. "Papist pamphlets." Sam snickered. "I'll wager you can't say that quickly three times in a row." "Yes, yes, make a jest of it, as always. You're not to be opposed to Catholics, as I have." "Oh, you've opposed yourself to them, have you?" "Stop it, Sam," I put in. "Can't you tell when you've touched a sore spot?" I turned to Sal Palvi. "What a crow do you have to pull with him, then?" he scowled at me. "What? I mean, what's given you such a poor opinion of him?" "I'll say no more. You only mock me." Yanking his cloak tightly about him, he again put several paces between himself and us. So that was chapter 4. Bye guys, see you later. See you later, see you later, see ya. See ya later. Bye guys.